Hello and welcome to the Digital Business Dojo podcast. Whether you're just starting to build your first online business or have an established business and are confused about how to transition to doing business online, we're here to help you grow and prosper. With great expert guests and just a little humor, here are your hosts, Paul Lacey and Dave Toomey.
Hello, everybody. We're here today with my friend Erin Flynn from outofofficeentrepreneur.com. And Erin's specialty is helping us spend more time in what she calls out of office while still making bank, which for anyone in England means making lots of money at the same time. And we're going to talk today about some of those processes and how you, Erin, went from busy freelancer to an out-of-office entrepreneur, which is what you call it. We're also going to talk a little bit about one of Erin's new courses called GTFO, which means Get the Flip Out of Your Inbox, which helps people wrestle with their inbox to get control of that just for starters. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about tech, a little bit perhaps about WordPress, and of course about Beaver Builder, because Erin, you are somebody who has been a smart person to choose Beaver Builder for a lot of your websites over the last couple of years. So I'm really pleased about that, because I'm a massive fan of Beaver Builder as well. So I just thought, first of all, if you're listening to this or you're watching this, then raise your hand if you're working harder now than ever before. And most people, I think, at this point are probably going to raise their hand, because if you've been in this game, whether it's being a digital agency, a freelancer or something like that, then you'll probably remember that 5 years ago, or especially 10 years ago, it seemed to be a lot easier. And why is that? We don't really know. Well, we probably do, but it's a lot of factors. Now, Erin helps overwhelmed creative entrepreneurs like me, like you, simplify their businesses by cutting out everything that doesn't serve them and creating copy and paste systems to speed up work. Normally, when you go to a party or something like that and you meet somebody for the first time, you might say to them, hey, how's work? And because you're not sure what else to say. And, you know, have you been busy? That's like the standard thing that people say when they're not sure what else to say to people. And what I tend to find is most of the time people come back to me and say, or I'll say back to them if they ask the question, yeah, it's all right. It's okay. Yeah, super busy at the moment. It's good. Yeah, it's good. It's really good. I'm really glad that I'm really busy. So, you know, that means that that's a good thing. But for you, Erin, you got a kind of more awkward answer to that, I'm assuming, in that that question is asked to people with an assumption that that's what you're going to say, and then you lead on to other things. But your answer, I'm assuming, would not be the standard one. Am I right?
Yeah, I would have to say something like, oh, it's great. Work's going really well. I spent the morning skiing, and then I made cookies with my toddler. And then I checked my emails for like 5 minutes. And that would be like my answer and how my workday went.
Yep, that's awesome. I mean, that would actually stop someone in their tracks in most situations, because they wouldn't know where to go next with the conversation. Because the standard answer, like I say, is, yeah, I'm super busy. And most people, for some reason, have started to assume that's a good thing. Like, I've definitely come out of that mindset a lot, thanks to you, actually, and some of the courses, because I've done a bunch of your courses. They're awesome. But I wondered, why is it that everybody is so busy these days? And what is it that you've done with your business and your lifestyle that has broken that trend? How have you done that? I mean, you can feel free to tell us a little bit about your background as well, which is probably useful, like what you used to do, and maybe perhaps at some point you realized something profound or had an epiphany or something and then just decided to do something different. But for sure, from what I understand, you do like 10 hours of work a week, mm-hmm. sometimes more if perhaps you're building a new course or something, but overall you're more out of office than you are in office as an entrepreneur. How have you done that?
Well, it definitely has not always been this way. When I started my business, I started a web design business in 2012. So I am now 10 years into being self-employed. And I just retired from web design like at the end of last year, so at the end of 2021. It was really hard for me to quit because I do enjoy web design, but now I'm like focusing more on courses and creating content and helping other entrepreneurs like get away from their desks a little bit more. I think to answer your question about like the whole being busy thing is when you're working for yourself, especially, I mean, everybody, doesn't matter what their job is, typically will say that they're being busy. But in general, like as a freelancer, if you're not busy, you're not making money. So having too many clients is a problem that, you know, if your business is not going super well, is one that you dream about having. You dream about being overbooked and making money because you're still searching for clients. So there is definitely like that stage, typically earlier on in business, but a dry spell can hit anybody. Like it doesn't matter how long you've been in business, a dry spell can definitely hit you, where you're just like, oh man, like I need clients, like I need to be busy, like I need this work. So especially in like the freelance entrepreneur world, being busy means your business is quote unquote doing well. And that could be true. It could not be true. My first year in business, I was busy the entire time. I probably worked 60 to 80 hour weeks and I made hardly any money. I just, you know, I didn't charge enough. I didn't have, you know, systems in place. So projects took me forever. I didn't know what the heck I was doing in terms of marketing, but I was busy. Every day I was at my computer, you know, 12, 16 hours a day, easy. And it didn't mean my business was doing well. It just, you know, it sounded good. Oh, I'm so busy. Like I'm, you know, doing this thing over here and I'm doing this thing over there. But in reality, I wasn't even focusing on the things that were making me money. And so I just, you know, was doing like the things that like I thought I should be doing. I was adding more services. I was like, people want web design from me. Well, I could also do just development, or I could just do just the design, or I could do like the whole package, or I could maybe do some SEO, because back in 2012, SEO was easier. It was still its own industry, but it was easier. And so I was like, I could probably figure that out, or I could do some graphic design. I could do some illustrations. I'm an artistic person. I'll just do whatever. Just give me money. Please give me money. So I was making myself extremely busy, confusing the heck out of anybody who like would come to my website and be like, what does she do? So I was not converting people into, you know, paying customers. And so what ended up happening was for me in 2014, my husband and I bought a house and needed a lot of renovations. My business was still not doing super well. Like I was doing much better than my first year in business, but I was making not a whole lot of money, not enough that I felt confident in my business, and especially not for the hours I was still putting in. And so our decision was that I would pause my business, do a lot of like the renovation stuff myself, because that would be the hit in my business would be less than paying a contractor to do it. And so I cut my business down to basically just like the bare bones. And very surprisingly, I made more money that year than in any year previously. And I worked a whole lot less. And I was like, hang on, there's something to this. And that was when it all started like falling into place for me. I started getting like systems set up because I was only offering a couple things. So then those projects started going much more quickly. People knew what it was that I was selling. And I was able to communicate that clearly in my marketing because it wasn't like, do you want SEO? Do you want web design? Do you want web development? Do you want illustrations? It was, I'm going to make you a website. And it's going to work. And it's going to like help convert your visitors into paying clients or customers. And that was it. And then, yeah, I did occasionally like have a few like requests for two things like outside the box. But in general, like that just really made my messaging clear. That's when people started like understanding what it was I did. And I worked, I mean, at that point, cutting my hours in half was still probably working like a 30 to 40 hour a week. But from there, I was able to streamline it even more. And now here I am at a 10 hour work week. So eventually, like I just kept cutting down and cutting down to what was working the best for me.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of the time when change happens, it's forced upon us. So that can be someone gets unwell or they get fired from that job, or, you know, get laid off or something like that, or something happens. I remember when I actually went from my regular job working in an agency to freelance, and the Al, who was the CEO, really nice guy of the agency that I worked for before I went to freelance. Just to say why I went to freelance was because it was such a long journey to get to this agency every day, and they did very long hours. I mean, nothing compared to what some of the long hours you can do as a freelancer, but the actual normal hours were like 8:30 in the morning till 6:30 in the evening, apart from one less hour on Friday. And I didn't realize that when I started the job, and I didn't realize quite how far it was to drive. But anyway, so I lasted a few months in this company, and we left on really good terms. And one of the things he said to me when I left, because I hadn't got another job to go to, I just kind of knew I couldn't do this anymore, was he said, hey, Paul, the thing is, you know, it's all very good and stuff that you do in freelance, but you realize that, like, with freelance, you're always trading time for money. So you will get to a point where you can't earn anymore, or you run out of time to do anything else. And I think that's quite good advice, but quite honestly, the things that I've been exploring in the last 12 months and what you've been exploring since that time in 2014, so you're way ahead of me, kind of prove that that is not true, that it's not, freelancing is not about peaks and troughs, trading time for money. There are other ways to do things that aren't just being your own boss of your own company. That's the one thing that, I mean, I don't know if you would agree or not, because you're making, I mean, it says on your website, so it says that you do 10 hours a day. You've looked after like 12,000 students over time of your courses. There was another 10, I can't remember what that was, 10 years, you've been doing this for 10 years. And then you make approximately minimum $100,000 a year for those 10 hours as such. It's a shame that you haven't done 10,000 students as well. You should have left that at 10,000, because it's just as impressive and it would have been tens across the line, but never mind, you've done 12,000. But some people would say to you, well, why don't you do 40 hours and then you can make 400,000? But would you agree that that's just a ridiculous calculation?
Yeah, well, there's definitely diminishing returns on how much time you put in, and energy wise and productivity wise, studies have shown that most people are productive, I think it's 2 hours and 53 minutes per day. If I'm like in the zone, I definitely can get like a good 4 hours. I mean, and everybody varies. Like sometimes you're like really into what you're doing, and yeah, you can put in 16 hours, just like your focus, but that's not every day. And so on average, your productivity is highest for about 3 hours, and everybody's like energy levels vary and stuff, so it could be at different times of the day. But in general, 3 hours of productivity, and then I would say you could throw in another hour for like stuff that you don't really need to be creative about, like admin work or whatever. And so you could have a 4-hour workday and probably get as much done as you would do in 8 hours. But actually like just be really focused and get it done instead of like refreshing your social media or checking your email or whatever, you know, small task that is like kind of just pulling you away and getting you distracted. But when it comes to like just adding more hours for more profit, that doesn't work in the way that you think it does. Like to an extent, yes. Like if I worked 20 hours per week, I could make more content. I could have more courses to sell. I could have more blog posts that lead into my courses. Sure. But on the flip side of that, the amount that I would make would probably not be double. It might be, I don't know, maybe 20% more. It would probably not be double. And I would be giving up like the kind of lifestyle that I really, really want. Like to me, past like a certain amount of like work and money, like you're really just facing like if you want to hit like, you know, $5 million and that's all that's important to you, then like go work constantly, do the hustle, put in all of those hours, maybe you'll get it. I still think you're going to have diminishing returns after, you know, the first 3 or 4 hours a day. But if you are trying to build a lifestyle, which most of us get into freelancing or entrepreneurship for, we want to be able to travel. We want to go on vacations. We want to spend time with our families. if that's what your goal is, you need to figure out like what your enough number is, like how much money like is enough for you to live the kind of life that you want. How can you hit that? And how can you say no to things past that? And that's one of the reasons I did retire from web design, because yes, I could still make websites. Yes, I could make 10,000 plus per website, but then I'm like getting these diminishing returns in terms of like the quality of life that I want to live, the amount of time that I want to spend with my toddler while he's tiny, the skiing and hiking that I want to do. So what's worth it? Is it worth the added stress and the added money? Or would you rather have the lifestyle that makes you happy? And everybody's enough number is going to be different. And you should not let people on the internet tell you what that number is, because I know like the six figure sounds really flashy. For some people, at least in like rural America, you probably don't need that much. In places like big cities, you probably need more. So, you know, you have to figure out what your numbers are and what your basically like dream life looks like. And yeah, when you do that, then you can build a business that supports it. And you can say no to all of the extra things that just suck your time and your energy and, you know, have you sitting at your desk when you want to be spending time with your kids or on an airplane going somewhere cool.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I mean, the thing is, the way I look at it now is that you're absolutely right. A lot of freelancers get into being an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, freelancer, or even starting a small business or something like that. It's normally they start it with the lifestyle in mind. There's some problem with their existing lifestyle and they see the flexibility of that. But somewhere along the line, a lot of people, I don't know if it's the majority, but certainly a lot of people lose sight of that original plan, which I think is quite an easy thing to do, because the moment you start listening to what you're hearing on social media or the ads that are coming at you, it's always about scale. It's like, right, take the thing you've got, scale it, and then follow this blueprint, you will scale your agency. Follow this blueprint, you will scale your freelancer. Create a $5 ebook and then you'll get a $5,000 coaching client. I'm sure you've seen all that sort of stuff before. And people get their own ideas, I think, get hijacked in place of someone else's idea of a sellable success blueprint. And then you kind of get the group think, the kind of hive mind that tends to encourage that, because there are so many kind of courses out there, snake oil type things that encourage, you know, this is how you can do this in 3 months or something like that. Whereas the genuinely looking at, you know, what is important to you in life, like family time, friends, peace of mind, mental health, any of those kind of things tend to, everybody knows those things don't come really quickly. You have to work at them. But the truth is, I tend to find that some people do get rich and they're really happy by that, you know, and they follow some kind of blueprint and they scale their agency and they do really, really well. That's not everybody's happiness, for number one. And also, there's a different, I think everybody's idea of what is fulfilling in life is different. That's why when I asked about, you know, why don't you sort of quadruple your hours and 400,000, I think you would be better probably, and anybody who's in that situation, to just carry on doing what you're doing, find that sweet spot, and then buy a lottery ticket every week, you know, to because most people have probably got more chance of winning the lottery than following a get rich quick scale or agency. They might scale their agency, but here's the other danger of that. How many agency owners or freelancers that try to do that have you seen, Erin, that completely burn out? I don't know if this is something you've seen, but I've burnt out 3 times in my sort of last 15 years of doing this. I don't know if this is something that you see in the people who come onto your programs. Like, is that something you see a lot?
Yeah, so most of the people who join my programs are solopreneurs, but having been, in the web design space for this long, I've definitely connected with a lot of agency owners, and I've done like some individual coaching with some of them. And yeah, there's just so much burnout, and there's managing people, and there's helping when the clients get angry, and there's like doing the marketing if you don't have the marketing department. And the reason they started their business was, well, one, because they liked making websites and they don't get to do that anymore. They have other people doing it. But two, like to have freedom in their business, instead they've got all of this responsibility and stress that they, because they thought the only way to scale their business to make more money was to start hiring people. And that's not actually the case. You can actually make, I mean, really good money as a solo, web designer or developer without a team. You can definitely do it with a team too, but there's more than one way to reach your goals. But we tend to fall into like, I saw this other person do it, and then I bought their $2,000 program, so now I have to do it. And
Been
that's not
there.
actually true.
No, absolutely. I think what you tend to find, and here's a book recommendation for people. I'm sure you already know this book. You probably already know the author. Paul Jarvis has a book, look it up, called Company of One, I think it's called, which I really love that book. I mean, it kind of highlights the fact that if you have a company or your freelance organization or you're a freelancer or whatever, and you do decide to do what everyone tells you, which is to scale the agency, scale the profits. Everybody kind of uses the positive word, scale your profits, all this kind of stuff. If your company is not in good condition or your freelance systems are completely chaotic, you're essentially scaling the problem. And do you know what I mean? So it's kind of not everything that scales is good. It's illnesses. It's sort of disease. When those things scale, it's not good. So it's kind of like this concept that scale isn't always a good thing. So this kind of leads into me kind of to one of the things that you've absolutely nailed. And I've been a student of yours for many years. We were talking about this just before we hit record, how I keep sending you money every year because I just keep getting more and more value out of the thing, out of the content that you put into your courses. And I think that one of the things that you're starting to really help people with is that we're now in this kind of, and feel free to disagree with this, but I feel that we're in this attention economy now, that we are now trained to we are trained and we are addicted to notifications. So social media notifications, updates on your Amazon Prime parcel that's coming. There's a new show on Netflix or something like that. Somebody just liked. Yes, your comment that you spent so much time, putting into a Facebook group for no reason at all whatsoever. And then obviously one of the worst ones of that is email notifications. So we get constantly interrupted with email notifications. And I feel that like this idea of notifications that we're constantly getting is it's that dopamine hit. It's like when people are liking something or commenting back to something positively that you might have said on social media, or if you're into Instagram or something like that, which I'm not so much, but people who are, they put out this version of themselves and then people like it or comment on it. And it's this constant dopamine hit. And I think that that applies to the inbox as well. And I do think that this constant dopamine hits for busy work or just mind-numbing, validation, self-validation is totally coming at the expense of kind of something more important from a chemical point of view, which is kind of like your serotonin levels, which tend to be more related to sense of fulfillment in life, where you have a day and at the end of the day, you're kind of like, that was a brilliant day. Or on the weekend, that was an absolutely brilliant weekend, or that was such a good holiday. Or even when you're working, yeah, do you know what? I had a target at the beginning of the day and I achieved it. It didn't normally happen, but what a great, what happened there. And so I don't know if you're aware of this kind of, you must be aware of this attention economy as such. And I just wonder if you have any thoughts on that and how it's affecting masses and millions and probably billions of people. with the mental health and stuff?
Yeah. So for me, one of the things that helped change my viewpoint on this, because I definitely, I've been on the internet for a very long time, back before social media, but then social media was a thing. And I was like, oh, I got likes on my posts and I'll post something else. And, you know, that kind of stuff.
So nice. Or,
so it does make you feel really good.
Yeah, of course.
But then I kind of reframed it in my head that it's almost like a Pavlovian response. You know, you're like Pavlov's dog, like, a ding went off. I gotta go check my email. I gotta go check this. And it's like that's really like not a very appealing thing when you think of it that way. Of course, all of these apps are designed exactly to do that. They are to get that kind of response from us. They are to keep us addicted to posting and, you know, getting in there and doing all of these things. So that's 100,000% by design. Like that's what they are trying to do. But it's not necessarily a good thing. And especially like when it comes to, I mean, anything can derail you, social media, but I find email, especially for freelancers and entrepreneurs, we wake up and we're like, oh, I've got notifications on my phone from my email. I better check it. And then anything that you wanted to get done that day is out the window because now you have a to-do list set by whoever is filling your inbox. So it's like, if you email me, Paul, and you were like, hey, I want you to do this, 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 and this. And I think this would be really great. Well, now I've got to respond to your email. And like, you know, I would like to respond to your email, but I shouldn't let your email dictate how I'm going to spend my day and what I'm going to get done that day, especially like for my life and my business. Like you can wait 24 hours until I get to it, or you can wait until the afternoon when I check my email. For 99.999% of us, like what's in our inbox is not a life or death thing. And we do not have to let it dictate our day. So we can still respond. We can still be a good friend, student or teacher or web designer or whatever, but we don't have to give, you know, that immediate, like, let me have this, like take over my whole entire day response, which so many of us do because we are addicted to checking our phones and checking our inboxes and then issuing an immediate response into something like email where it's not meant to be instant, but we have made it more of a chat versus an email. And that's where I think we really start to get problems because that's how we get busy all day doing all of these things that are now in our inbox. But we never accomplish the things that we really needed to get done that are going to move the needle in our business, that are going to make us money, and that are going to allow us to actually have that free time to go do whatever it is we want to do with our lives.
Yeah, I think the reason we want to reply to these emails is the dopamine hit. You know, we think we're doing, we're keeping busy, like the person that we ask at the party, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really busy. It's,
oh God, and I love a checklist. Good. Like the more I can like go through, yeah. You might be the same way. I think a lot of entrepreneurs or freelancers are, or just like, I did so much today. And in reality, yeah. it wasn't actually worthwhile.
I know. If you're a designer, are you a designer or are you an email answering service? It's kind of, you know, you can't do both. I actually said to my wife today, because I was telling her about you and the courses you've done, and I was telling her about the new course, Get the F Out of Your Inbox, which we'll talk about in a minute actually. And I said there is something in Erin's course that she talks about, and you mentioned it just a minute ago, so I just wanted to re-highlight it. The concept of your inbox is a to-do list, but it's not your to-do list. It's somebody else's demands on your time. And for some reason, we've become accustomed to quickly acting upon that because, and I think a lot of it is a cultural phenomena as such. And I think a lot of it is related to, like I said, what social media teaches us. Notification check, dopamine. But with the inbox, it's like notification check problem. Oh, it's almost like it's you. Like most emails every day aren't saying, hey, Paul, I know I said this, like the website was delivered like 2 months ago, but I just wanted to say again, well done. What a great job. You know, it's normally kind of like there is a problem with the website when I'm logging in and, you know, I press this, nothing's working. And you kind of like, I can fix that immediately and you get it done. And I honestly think, I don't know if you noticed as well, but I think so many people are so close to burnout and they're fatigued and they're doing these long hours like you were doing and that I've done in the past as well. I'm not that person anymore. I'm in recovery as such from that, which I think is what you have to call it, because burnout these days is officially a, I don't know what you call it, like a syndrome or a, it's like a not exactly a disease. Problem. Yeah, it's a chronic issue that's even recognized now by the World Health Organization as a legit health problem as such. And I think that people have dreams about what their life wants to be. Sometimes that's making money. Sometimes it's probably more like what you and I kind of value, which is that if I want to make loads of money, I'll do the lottery. But what I want is enough money to have the right lifestyle. In my case, you know, be a better father, be a better husband, enjoy some of the things I want to do, learn how to play the piano, whatever. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter what it is. But all of those things, or play more console games in my case, for instance.
I love WordPress. I've built all my businesses around it for the last 15 years. But just like your car, stuff can and will go wrong if you don't take care of the engine. Security, updates, performance, backups, uptime, there are a lot of things to juggle. Well, what if I told you there's a tool I personally use to manage all of those hassles and more? It has a simple unified dashboard for managing your site or hundreds of sites. It's called WP Remote. Update all your sites in one click from the dashboard. And if you like, safety test changes and updates with a one-click integrated staging. WP Remote centers around comprehensive security to keep your sites clean with a combination of powerful yet simple to use firewall rules, with a low CPU malware scans and uptime monitoring including as well. Backups of your site are taken daily and go back a full 90 days. If you have a WooCommerce site, there's even an option for real-time backups recording every order on your site as it happens. And if WP Remote finds a problem, don't worry, the one-click cleanup will put you right. I've even fixed sites in minutes from my smartphone. Our reputations rely on the service we provide. Thanks to WP Remote, my clients are really happy and I'm even happier. Make site management effortless with WP Remote.
I think that what you've hit the nail on the head, I don't know if you were aware of this, but I think you probably are because you're smart like that, is that if somebody can't get control of their inbox, what chance have they got of everything after that? Do you know what I mean? So it feels to me that your course is something that everybody should do. So there's a plug for your course and it's free at the moment. So it might not be when this goes out, but at the moment, you can go to outofofficeentrepreneur.com and sign up for the Get the F Out of My Inbox course for free. And doing the things that you say in your course requires a little bit of willpower. Not a lot, but you've got to have some. You've got to have some energy left in the tank to sit and do the things to make your life a little bit better. I mean, what do you think about this thing I've just proposed? Is this ridiculous to sort of say, if you can't get control of your inbox, what chance have you got of achieving good systems in place for the rest of your dreams in life?
I mean, I'm sure there will be someone who's like, well, I have a messy inbox, but I have the perfect life otherwise. And I'm sure that happens. But I do think, like, for most of us, if you can't get control over, you know, something like your inbox that really has a lot of impact on your life. Like, you may not realize how much impact your inbox has on your life, but think about how many times a day you check it. Like, currently, now I'm down to once or twice a day, but I used to have it open all day long. Like, literally, I would have it open on one screen with whatever I was working on the other. Like, that's how much it controlled my life. And
I think that's normal as well. I think that's typical. Yeah.
I think it is. I think for, you know, especially people who, well, I think people in the workplace too, because I remember back at my last office job a million years ago, I also had my inbox open all the time. And so you're just in this constant, like, reactive mode where, like, oh, something came in, I got to stop what I'm doing, which, is detrimental in many ways, because one, it makes you kind of anxious because you're like, oh, I have to go to see what's happening. I have to go take care of it right now. But also it distracts you. I think a study says that it takes something like 23 minutes on average to get back focused into deep work. So you're losing 23 minutes every time that notification goes off and you go check your inbox. And so, you know, even though it seems insignificant, I think that if you can conquer your inbox, if you can put in the boundaries, and my course is actually, there's a little bit of tech, but it's mostly boundaries that you need for your inbox. If you can put those in place, I do think that you can start putting them into other aspects of your life and business. And so my hope is that with this course, that, you know, if you can just get control of like that one thing, which is, again, it's going to be like willpower and a little bit of tech. But if you can do that, then that's just going to set yourself up for, you know, bigger things in the future, like doing a whole entire, you know, web design development project. Like that's a much bigger, more technical system to implement. But it's going to be hard to do that when you're constantly distracted by your inbox. So if you can start with that inbox and realize the impact that that can have, like that's going to free up literally so much time, like just, you know, getting down to checking your email once to twice per day and like actually taking action on what's in there and being done with it. That will have a huge impact on your life and your business and your stress levels, because you won't be having like, oh, dang, oh, I gotta go check this. I gotta go do that. And that for me, I don't know, I'm kind of an anxious person. I don't know if you are, Paul. I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs are. We're just very, tend to be anxious people in general, which is good in the sense that we tend to like think of a whole lot of different scenarios and we're able to like, you know, think ahead and, you know, be quick on our feet. But it also means like we need to reduce stress and things that cause us that anxiety as much as possible, because you know, that email is not worth getting worked up over. It's not worth the stress that you're trying to answer it while you're trying to have dinner with your family. Like, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it at all.
No. And I saw, I think on your website, you mentioned you were checking your inbox at your wedding.
Yep.
And I'm sort of embarrassed to say that I can remember checking my inbox when my daughter was being born. I mean, that was a long process. There was some times when nothing was happening. But I remember being on my Nokia N95, which was quite difficult to do email on. You might even not know what this phone is, Erin. I'm a bit older than you, I think. But and just seeing, you know, things that were completely distracting me from the situation. And when you sort of look back on those moments when later in life you've sort of learned that there was something wrong with that, you kind of Well, I hope people get to a point where they realize that you can't do that sort of thing forever. You will burn out. And I do think that the inbox, like you said, is one is kind of the central anchor of people's day a lot of the time. They kind of look to their inbox, they read an email, and then the market is unread. It's like, oh, God, it's like the worst thing that you can ever do. But essentially what they're doing is context switching completely. I've done it a lot. I'm much better at it now. The way I dealt with it in the short way is I kind of stopped being an agency and went to Solopreneur, which was more like a way to just reduce the amount of emails and work that was coming as such. But I still had the bad habits and I still have some of those bad habits. I think that if you were going into your inbox every few minutes, just like you said, it's like 23 minutes it will take you to get back up to the speed or the efficiency that you were doing. And what are the chances that you'll probably go and check social media in that time as well, or another email will come in? So you're kind of like in perpetual context switching. You're creating like a self-induced chaos for yourself. And I think, like you said, most people who work in tech are like the opposite of, let's say, people who work in sales, who are like super confident all the time. I could be wrong about people in sales, but I get the impression that there's a lot of introverts in tech. I'm an introvert. I just kind of up my game for podcasting and stuff like that, but then I'll disappear from the world after that. But I think that we can find ourselves in this situation where so many people in tech will tell you that they think that they've got ADHD. Like, that almost everybody in tech thinks that they've got ADHD. And I honestly sometimes think it might be controversial to say, is that a lot of people actually haven't got that, but they have almost exactly the same symptoms. They're anxious all the time. They're shaking. They're doing weird things with their hands, their eyes blinking constantly or something like that. That's stress in a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lack of ability to focus on anything is basically a bit like you said, 23 minutes it takes to get back to your focus. If you're constantly operating in this suboptimal situation, there's another figure as well that I heard that's similar to that, that when you are distracted, you have 15 less points on your IQ. So not only are we sort of putting ourselves into kind of self-induced ADHD situation, we're also reducing our IQ to that of like a 8-year-old. And we're trying to run a business that is apparently going to, you know, run our lives. So anyway, I mean, that's one of the things that kind of hit me when doing a little bit of research about the impact of inboxes. And clearly you've come to that conclusion, because your course is all about changing the habits at a simple level. You're not even charging anything for it. And the impact that your free course can have, if someone implements it and takes like 1 hour to implement this, is pretty phenomenal, really. And I think, so it's probably worth us just briefly going into just some of the super tips that your course actually goes into. Some of my favorite ones. So scheduling sending. Why should we schedule a send? So when we write the email, should we just hit send? And then like we've dealt with that email, surely that's the right thing to do.
So that does definitely seem like the right thing to do. And my want to check things off my list does actually make this hard for me. And I assume people, you know, watching or listening are like, are probably like, I just want it done. Like, I want it done. But when you schedule the send, you're not worried about getting a response back immediately and then it turning into basically a chat back and forth. As well as if you're like me and you ever have like checked your email outside of what are normal office hours, it can be really bad if you just like, you know, hit reply on that, send it, and it's 10 o'clock at night. And then your client now thinks, oh, I can send emails whenever. Like, Aaron's checking emails all the time. I remember like earlier on in my business, I would have a client that would call me, you know, on the weekends because I was responding to emails. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm just trying to like clear my inbox. But she would see that I'm, you know, actively working, and she would call me and ask me, you know, some question that wasn't even related to what I was doing for her. And of course, I felt obligated to answer and help her. And so, you know, you're really training your clients to either expect an instant response or to basically get a response from you 24/7. And that is not something you can do as, you know, a solopreneur for sure, but even as, you know, an agency or, you know, like a small team, you should not be setting those expectations. That's just not realistic. And that's not how most companies work. But for some reason, we think that our business has to work that way. And that's not what we want to train our clients to do. If you do want to have some sort of like 24/7 chat service, like make your clients pay for that and outsource it like to people, to it, like some team that can have people available 24/7. Do not do that in your inbox that you are answering while you're trying to, you know, just clear your inbox to go to sleep. So schedule your sends. And even if you're like just, you know, setting aside an hour to like go through your emails, schedule them to send at the end of that hour so that you're not getting instant responses back while you're trying to clear your inbox and move on with your day.
Yeah. Do you find there's like a perfect time to schedule the send? I mean, I'm thinking like 8 a.m. for the next day or something, or do you find there's like a sweet spot? Does it depend on what the email is as such?
I think it depends. I think if you're in your inbox at 10 o'clock at night, you know, go ahead and schedule it to send at 8 a.m. the next day. Like that's probably fine. If those are your office hours, if you do have unusual office hours, which I have always had because I am not a morning person, you know, I would schedule it to send at like 10 a.m. or something where I would reasonably like be awake when it would go out. But I think it really kind of just depends on your business. And 8 a.m. is fine. But if your business, like, you know, if you don't answer, like if you don't work on like say Fridays, for example, because that's the day that you need to take care of your kids or whatever, Don't schedule emails to go out on Friday. Like, schedule them to go out at your next working day. So just like think about what your schedule is and like what's reasonable, and communicate your office hours to your clients. That's another thing that's not in the email course, but in general, like your clients should know what your office hours are, because if they don't know, like they're going to assume maybe you're an 8 to 5. And if you are, great. But if you're not, they are probably fine with that as long as they know. Again, like I have never worked normal office hours. Like, I mean, I guess technically I did when I was working like 12 to 16 hour days, but in general, like once I've had control over my schedule, I'm not a morning person, and I'm not also not going to be checking things late at night. So I'm going to be checking my emails roughly between 10 and 2. And that's like when I'm going to be at my computer. So I think it's fine as long as that's communicated to your clients so that they're not like going, oh, it's 8 a.m. on a Monday, but I haven't heard back yet. Well, if those aren't your office hours, they're not going to hear back.
Mm. I think scheduling the send was one of the most powerful super tips that you've got in your course. And I mean, it goes against the dopamine hit of ticking it off the list, but with Google Mail, which is the platform that you mentioned in your course, you can do that. You can just hit a button that says, so you can kind of, and it disappears from your inbox. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And it's scheduling for whenever this right time is. That means that, you know, it's going to go to someone. And then when you get the bounce back email from them, the reply, it's going to come into one of your windows where you're actually available to go and check the email. That's another one of the things that you mentioned in the course is set certain times. Maybe you said, is it 2 times a day you check your email? I mean, the average person, if someone was sitting watching them and was kind of, you know, hidden camera, I don't know what the average is, but it must be like 20, 25 times a day, which is clearly not ideal to move forward anyone's business or ideas or anything like that. But you mentioned that people should know your office hours. I know you don't mention that in the email course. It's not really relevant to that course as such, but just to plug one of your other products, you do mention that kind of thing. And you do go over the process of onboarding new clients in some of your other courses in terms, because I've done those courses, obviously. So in terms of setting expectations, it's all part of the screening process. If someone objects to that concept, you know that they're not potentially a good fit for you. So I love that stuff that you're doing in some of your other content as well there. One of the other things I really like in your course is your concept of aliases and filters. So setting up Google Mail aliases to automatically start emptying that inbox. So payments get auto-archived and put into a folder. You can just check that once a day. You can go, hey, I wonder who's paid me or who I owe money to. Check that. And you're not context switching. You're specifically but you're going into your inbox, into a folder that is automatically archived. You're saying, let's deal with the money bits. Okay, someone paid me. Oh, I need to pay a bill. Done. Then you can go into the other folder that is about something else, newsletters if you want to. And you can look at all those things rather than newsletter, payment, client question, proposal request, problem with caching or something like that. That is just absolute chaos to me. However, I live it. I have lived it a lot and not so much now. So I love that aspect of the course. I'll tell you a super tip as well from me to you. Actually, I don't think you mentioned it in the course. And you talked about unsubscribing from newsletters, which is a good thing to do, I think. I'm very much of the mind these days that let's get back to a situation where if we want to read something or find out about something, we go and seek it rather than being constantly told about everything. Keep subscribed to the ones that you like. So I still listen, subscribe to your email newsletter, Joe Casabona, someone who we both know, and a few other people, Paul Jarvis emails from time to time, some super high value newsletters. But what I've actually got, my super tip is I actually put a filter into Gmail that looks for the word unsubscribe and puts all those in a folder. And then I go through those, unsubscribe them. And so it sometimes goes wrong if someone's forwarding like an email to me from a support system. But because I check that once a day, I capture those things. So it's almost like you will find it easier as an individual to to go to the point of checking your email to maybe maximum 3 or 4 times a day, if you know that all of those emails by using labels and aliases and filters have gone into places where you go and you check those things in an organized fashion. Because I check the newsletter one once a day just to see if something that shouldn't be in there has gone in there. And I think that that's, if you've got an organized inbox, you can be very mindful about how you're doing that. So I love that you've done that. I think that the email course on its own, and especially the other larger courses that you've done, helping people reach fulfillment in life. They're helping people realize their dreams, because without those kind of things, you can't do it. Do you want to mention anything about what's your main program at the moment that this one essentially leads to? Because when you finish the email course, it invites you to go check out, hey, you mastered that. Next step is this. What's the next step for people after the email course?
So the next step would be systems for services, which is how to streamline basically delivering the services that you offer. So that really goes like from the very beginning, like from your inquiry form to offboarding your client and basically simplifying all of it so that you collect the information that you need. You're not going back and forth a million times. You're screening out bad clients before they hire you. Basically all of the things. And then getting actually useful feedback from clients during a project, which I know is really tricky sometimes. And then like offboarding them in a really great way that can either bring them back to, work with you again if you have additional products or services, or it can offer them referrals to whatever the next step is, so that you kind of like hold their hand through the offboarding process without actually having to hold their hand. You can do it pretty automated.
I think that anybody who's a freelancer should go check it out and just go and find out. Because I mean, you've got all kinds of stuff in there that help stop the pain as such, if you know what I mean. That's some of the stuff that I've noticed in your courses. Managing onboarding, saying no to the right sort of things, making sure you even have a bunch of email templates. So here's an awkward situation that you might have to deal with. Don't worry about it. This is a common situation. Use this as a kind of template email, just season to taste kind of thing. Just tweak it a little bit. And you've already put the thinking into these email templates that you can just pop in there and respond to someone. Emails like inviting someone to create content, making sure that they understand that if they don't meet their own deadlines, without making it like an offensive communication, you're saying, you know, if you don't meet your deadline, because of this reason and this reason, we will need to move the final deadline. I don't know if you specifically have an email about that, but you have those kind of, yeah, you do. Of course you do. You have those kind of things. And I think at the end of the day, what you're kind of disrupting is that a lot of people look to tech for their solution. So whether it's ClickUp or a project management tool or something like that, or a chatbot or something like that, they're constantly looking for tech solve their problems. And what you are disrupting on that is tech helps you, but it's about the systems that you put in place. And you will never get anywhere if you don't actually know what success looks like to you, e.g. fulfillment, which I think summarizes like where you've, to me, when I look at what you've done, your absolute success is that you've making good money. You're doing work that you love. It must be fulfilling because you know you're helping people and you're choosing the hours that you work and you're getting to enjoy the things at the time of your life that are important at the time of your life. For instance, if that's looking after kids or going skiing or spending time with your husband or just learning how to play the piano or whatever it might be. So we're coming up to the hour now, funnily enough. So speaking of tech, first of all, what are your sort of favorite tech tools? Talking like WordPress, you do learning stuff. So what kind of learning system do you tend to use? And what do you kind of favor for things like online transactions, that kind of stuff? What are your three best tools or something?
Oh, three best tools. WordPress for sure. Have been using it forever. And with that, Beaver Builder, because oh my god, it saves so much time. Good choice.
Yeah.
Oh man, I when the value of Beaver Builder, not that it's expensive, I think it's very reasonably priced, but the value really came to me when I was trying to redesign my website while holding like a baby. And I was like, I need to get like the sales page done. I need to do this. And I could only do it one-handed. And with Beaver Builder, I could do it. And then, oh, course-wise, I knew you're gonna make me talk about this because I was talking about it on Twitter. And I'm so torn on what I want to do because I've used Teachable for years, I think since 2016, and I've been very happy with them. But Thrivecart Learn is like coming onto the scene and it's really cool. So it's really, it's like, it's making me want to like move over there. But I'm also like, oh, I've got like almost 4,000 students on Teachable plus a lot of courses. Like it's a big move. So I'm like, it what is. Do I want to do? And I did launch my new course, the GTFO Your Inbox on Thrivecart Learn to like really test it out. And it's, I mean, it's good.
It's worked great. I mean, the, I won't push you on choose between one of those tools because I mean, they're both SaaS LMS, software as a service LMS systems. Why not WordPress? Why, what's your decision to not use one of the WordPress solutions for so there, learning?
There are fantastic solutions out there. And like definitely I've seen amazing sites with them, but I actually used to have a self-hosted solution on WordPress and there are just a lot of moving parts. And at the time I was running a membership, so I was releasing new content every single month. And so, and I was also, so as a membership, but you could also buy things individually. And it was just like, there was a lot of setup every single time. I was the only person who could do it. I ended up in the hospital. That was in 2016. I ended up in the hospital for like over a week and I was supposed to release this thing. And of course, with my anxiety, I was like, oh, I can't just tell them it's going to be later. Like, how can I do this while I'm dying in the hospital? You know, fun entrepreneur thoughts. So for me, I was just like, I want something that's
funny,
more...
but it's not funny sort of thing. So
exactly. I want something that's more like, first of all, easier to do. And I'm sure a lot of them have gotten a lot easier than they were in 2016 too. It's just like the way technology has changed, but doesn't have as many moving parts. And for me at the time, Teachable was so great because everything's just like uploaded in one place. It's really simple to do. Tons of people, like just VAs, virtual assistants, like would know how to do it if I needed someone to go in and do it or my
you
husband could figure it out.
From,
yeah, you've got
from specialists in that as well, I guess, as well.
And so for at the time, like it was just so easy and it was definitely worth like the cost because when you also average out like how much good hosting costs and how much it costs to like host your videos somewhere, which now there are cheaper options too. But at the time, Vimeo was pretty much the only solution, which is quite pricey. And so the cost between doing self-hosted and doing Teachable was not drastically different. So I was like, why don't I just do Teachable? And then if something goes wrong with the site, Teachable will fix it for me.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do anything really. Or if somebody's really having a login problem, like you can contact Teachable support. And so having that kind of extra layer has been really, really nice. And you don't have that with self-hosted. Of course, you are giving up tons of control. And there are things that Teachable does not do that drive me a little bit nuts. Because I just like, I'm like, why is it so hard? Well, now they have PayPal payments finally for subscriptions. They used to not. But I was like, why is it so hard to have the first payment be more than the payments afterwards? You can't do it on Teachable. You can do it with Thrivecart. You can do it with most WordPress solutions, but Teachable doesn't have that. So, you know, for like the extra support and stuff. And I actually, I'm grandfathered in a nice plan that gives me like some extra stuff that I don't technically pay for. And I've been on there long enough and made enough on there that I have a special person to contact. So it's a little bit, you know, like hard to leave. But there are so many cool solutions out there. So I don't want to be like Teachable is like what, like probably most people watching this or listening to this are going to be like, I want to do my own thing. And that's totally cool too. So it really just kind of depends on like, you know, what you're looking for. And I can't say you're going to get the same stuff on Teachable that I get because I've been with Teachable for so long. You're probably not. So just as a little disclaimer, you're probably not going to like get on there and, you know, get everything that I have just because I've been with them for so long.
I do love Thrivecart. 50% of my entire income comes through Thrivecart on recurring revenue, things like website care plans and other things like that. And I think it's just like what you are, really. It's a disruptive, in a good sense. I mean, you're disrupting things in a bad way, but you know, it's targeting these established products, whether it's WordPress LMSs or Teachable, and saying, right, what can we learn from everything they've done over the last 10 years and then launch and solve all those problems for people? I think they've done a great job at Thrivecart, but yeah, it's interesting. I don't think WordPress is the right solution for everything, but people do need to try stuff for themselves. I mean, what happens if your course is super, super successful? You need to scale that server up. Using Teachable or Learn, you don't need to worry about that. It's done for you. It scales, you know, they want your success rather than your success is a problem for the server. It's crashed, you know, so you need to pay more money. So I think, no, that's great. That's great. I've got one last question, if that's all right. Digital Business Dojo is all about people moving from, whether they're just graduating from college, or whether they are in a job and they hate that now and they want to move out of that, or if they're running an agency and they want to kind of change their lifestyle or something. It's all about how do you go from where you are in digital to something that is better. Not all about profit. It's just, it's quite aligned to the things that you teach, Aaron. So that's one of the reasons I really was hoping that you would say yes to this interview. Thank you for that, by the way. So I just wondered, if you could give one piece of advice to somebody who feels stuck at the moment, and what is just one piece of advice you could give to that person who's stuck and wants to move to a better place? It doesn't have to be the full solution, just like, what's the next step?
I think if you're stuck, I think you need to look at what you want in your life. So I know that's like a big thing to look at. But like if a year from now, like where do you want to be? Like what do you want your life to look like? What do you want to be doing? How do you want to be spending your days? And think about like seriously, like write down like a year from now, I want, you know, my day to look like this. And then write down what your day looks like. When you know what that looks like, I think you're going to be able to like make decisions in your business, in your life, that are going to point you in that direction. And if you can stay focused on what that vision is, you're going to be able to make decisions a lot more easily. You're going to be able to get unstuck because you're going to be like, okay, this is not actually what I want. This seemed like, you know, a great idea, or I'm like stuck on making this decision for whether I want to, you know, take a job with this company or do my own thing, whatever it is. If you know what you want your life to look like, you will be able to make decisions and get unstuck much, much more easily. You'll be able to say no to things. You'll be able to say yes to things, and you'll be able to do it confidently. And you'll probably get there faster than a year, honestly.
That makes me feel quite emotional. I think absolutely, no, you're right. No, that's absolutely brilliant. I've kept you for long enough now, Erin. Where can we find all your courses online? Where can we find you online to find out more about changing our lives for the better in the digital space?
The best place to find me is outofofficeentrepreneur.com. Not super active on social media, so don't bother. I might get on Twitter occasionally, but probably better going to my main website and you know, getting one of my freebies. So probably the GTFO your inbox course, if that's still free when you're, you know, checking this out. Otherwise, I'm sure I will have something else free to help you out, and then we can communicate on email that I'll check once, maybe twice a day.
And schedule the send for the right
so that
time
you don't well. Reply right away.
Exactly. I'm glad that you've managed everybody's expectations for that right now as well, which is absolutely the right thing to do. Well, thank you so much, Erin. It's been an absolute pleasure. We've known each other for a number of years, and this is the first time we've actually gone on screen.
Thank you
together,
to today's so sponsor, awesome. WP Remote. Switch to the better way of managing WordPress websites, future, get one-click and, updates, rock-solid security, and fast, so, reliable yeah, backups with WP Remote. Head over to wpremote.com and get set up in just 60 seconds.
Cool. Cheers. Catch you later.